Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Thank you, Byron. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan, all over D.C. on 106.7, to our Richmond audience, 105.1 FM, 910 AM. Coast to coast, people streaming all over America, the Odyssey app. We appreciate all of you, and thank you for doing so. 5 at 5, presented by Wave Soda. It's great, super simple, bubbly water, splash of real juice, and some caffeine. Unsweetened, no stevia or artificial sweeteners, just a clean finish. It only has 2 to 6 grams of sugar, 15 to 25 calories per can. Order now. Website's wavesoda.com. Get 15% off by entering either of our names as your promo code, Grant or Danny. Wavesoda.com. 15% off, Grant or Danny. The creator is a 106.7 listener and a big-time junkies mark for years and years. Let's go to number one. You know, we're starting on the ice. Just talked to John Carlson. Caps Rangers tonight. There will be fights. Going to be crazy. Tom Wilson is a marked man. The Rangers put out an egregious statement. We started the show talking about what a joke it was, how embarrassed that organization should be, and how childish they looked. Their president and their GM has been fired since our show started today. That's not a joke. Lars Eller of the Capitals on what he expects tonight in the game.
I think the whole situation has probably been blown out, as we would do in any given situation. So I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but I don't think for us it's a new game. I think the whole situation has probably been blown out of proportion. So I don't know what to expect, but I'm prepared for anything. But at the same time, I'm gonna try to go out and play the game it's supposed to be played, the way it's supposed to be played.
July 4th tonight up at MSG. There's going to be fireworks. And you know there's a vendetta. You know that those guys are aggrieved. They're missing the playoffs. So what do they have to lose? A lot less than the Capitals do. The Capitals have an awful lot at stake right now. They're trying to catch the Penguins, trying to have be a division winner, play for seeding, heading into the postseason. No Alex Ovechkin, it looks like. They got a lot going on that's way more important than what the Rangers have going on. The Rangers would love nothing more than to muck it up for the Caps, who are now their public enemy number one, most specifically Tom Wilson. So you're going to get baited. You're going to be on the business end of some things. It's just about what your priority is. If you want to get it over with, now let's see if we can play a hockey game. If you want to get into one of these sort of bizarre head games and back and forth and who threw it who or who checked who or who did whatever, I don't know, man. To me, the most important thing is 2 points tonight. Then, after 1,000 feet, we could settle some grudges.
Yeah, I don't go up there into this game like thinking about winning a fight or getting even. I just know that it's part of the territory.
It's coming, tonight. Yeah.
You're Tom Wilson. You're in the lineup. It's kind of hockey code, right? They think that you did something you shouldn't have done. You got to answer the bell. And I'm answering the bell for the punch to the back of the head of a player that could have led to a suspension but didn't. I don't think he needs to answer to anything on Artemi Panarin. Don't jump on my back and I won't beat you up. Don't jump on my back and I won't slam you to the ground. Pretty simple for me. But based on the punch, the cheap shot, I didn't like that. He's going to have to answer the bell, and I think he will. I mean, I know he will. He's going to fight tonight. How many times? I don't know. Brendan Dillon's probably also going to fight tonight. Garnet Hathaway's probably also going to fight tonight. So if you're like Danny, you don't like fighting in hockey.
Not the night for you.
This one ain't yours. This one's mine. This is our time. This is my time tonight. Excited about it. It's number one in our five at five. But as you said, Danny, get me 2 points. Keep this division hunt alive. That's really what matters. Number two, let's talk Nationals baseball. Tanner Rainey's on the hill. It has been an awful struggle for him. He's facing a pitcher. Nats are down 2-0. Get out of the jam and let's come back in the ball game. Dave Jagger didn't get to call him getting out of the jam, though.
The 0-1. Swinging a high drive, dead center field. Robles going back. I don't believe it. It's a grand slam home run for the pitcher, Waskar Ynoa. It is 6-0 Atlanta.
Dave sounded thrilled that Tanner Rainey gave up a bomb to the pitcher.
I do believe it, by the way, just based on how tough it's been for Rainey. And Noah's hitting .385 with power. He's got bolts in his last couple starts.
He's a marvel. Throws 100, hits bombs. Shohei Ynoa over here. But Tanner Rainey's not good right now. And the only person that seems more confident or seems to think differently is Davey Martinez. Trots him out there in high leverage situations. To get to where you want to go, you need Tanner Rainey to be good. I understand you got to put him out there. Maybe not there. I don't know. Maybe not with some inherited runners. Maybe not in that exact spot. Walk, homer, yuck, and that's your ball game. That's how it went. And Ynoa's filthy, and the Nats' offense couldn't do much.
Twice now they've faced him, and twice they haven't been able to hit him. A couple games left in this series. Ross was actually pretty good last night. Allowed 2 earnings, including one when scored when Rainey came in and inherited the runner in 5-plus innings. But Ross has a 1.29 ERA in 4 starts this year, other than that awful 10-run game that he had against the Cardinals. So he is largely been very good, and you can say the same about Eric Fetty. Eric Fetty's first game of the season was not good. He got knocked out of the game really as it was getting started. Since then, though, he's had a sub-3 earned run average in his last 4 outings. So I've liked what I've seen from Fetty. He gets another chance tonight to run it back for the Nationals as they try to get even with the Braves in this series and get themselves back atop the National League East. Let's stay in baseball for a second. We don't often travel outside of the Nats to talk Major League Baseball in our 5 at 5, but sometimes it's warranted, and this is one of those times. Last night, the Yankees played the Astros. Why do we care? It was the first time Houston has gone to New York since the 2019 League Championship Series when the Astros beat the Yanks, and the thought is that they were possibly cheating. We know they cheated their way to the 2017 World Series. That's been proven. The speculation is maybe they were wearing some type of sensors or doing something extremely illegal technologically in 2019. How about this last night? Yankees fans chanting cheater each time one of the suspected Astros who did something weird with some tomfoolery afoot back in 2019 came to the plate.
Now the whole crowd is chanting cheater. .32, line drive, and caught by Wade. Took a base hit away from Altuve.
Now you can ask me. I mean, it felt like a playoff atmosphere. I mean, amazing 10, 12,000 fans, whatever, are in there. You know, the energy that was created, we haven't seen that since, 2019. So it was a fun game to be a part of, and guys did a lot of really good things tonight, defensively, some big at-bats, some big pitching performance. So it was a fun night to play the game.
Heard Michael Kay on the call there, then Aaron Boone, manager of the Yankees as well. Listen, I can't stand the Yankees. I can't stand Yankee fans. I've had enough to last 1,000 lifetimes, but that was awesome. The enemy of my enemy last night. That was so great. If we're doing requests, like if we can go up to the DJ booth and do some requests, could I get some more attention on Bregman? Could I get some more Bregman hate? The Yankees fans are focused on Altuve because he hit the bomb off of Aroldis Chapman.
I like Altuve.
Yeah, they were going after Altuve big time.
I like Bregman too, though.
Yeah, they went after Altuve. And they did expletive Altuve a lot. And then the chant worked better because of the actual word. Could I get some more venom towards Bregman, if I'm doing requests?
I am confused, though.
Yeah.
What was the cadence? Like, expletive Altuve. That's so many syllables.
It was only one syllable. You know what I mean? It was very quick. What do they play in hockey with?
A puck.
Yeah. It was that to Altuve.
They were saying.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. You smell what I'm stepping in there? Could I get. Just this is for me. I'm doing requests. I'm selfish.
Like
it was great.
I like the idea, though, of that chant. Expletive Altuve.
Give me.
Expletive Altuve.
I need a little. Correa can catch a little bit. I think he's less of a villain. It's really about Bregman for me. Bregman's my number one seed of disdain. I want Bregman to catch
some. Because he carried the bat that one time. But remember that Juan Soto got him back.
No, it's not even that. He was at that press conference, he was at the press. He also one time somebody caught up in the dugout, and he was just such a jerk about it. Like, how dare you ask me anything about anything?
Well, Correa was the one that did like the 10-minute interview where he got mad at everyone else. I don't know. It's hard for me because I've always liked all of those guys. Carlos Correa was a first overall pick out of the Puerto Rican Baseball Academy. And I loved the kid coming up through the minors. Everyone thought Buxton was going to go one, and they took Correa. Buxton, by the way, is having a career year. Up until now, it looked like that was the right pick.
More like Buxton, am I right? He looks amazing this year, by the way.
He's been sensational.
Gold glove, hitting bombs.
9 years later or whatever. Altuve is one of batting titles, one of the few guys I've ever interviewed that I'm 3 inches taller than. He's legitimately like 5'5". Kind of love him for that. And Bregman's also about 5'8 and hits 40 bombs. I always liked those guys, so I don't hold a grudge against them forever, but yeah, it's easy to not like the Astros. And my frustration with the whole thing is that Dusty, after like 4 games this year, legitimately, said, hey, okay, enough.
That's enough, guys.
It's been enough, fans. There were 3,000 fans at a couple games, and a couple guys went like this. They went, hey, Correa, you hit that trash can, you bum. And then one guy was like, hey, Bregman, look up here. You're a cheater. And he's like, I'm a cheetah? Like an animal? He's like, yeah, you're a cheetah. And then Dusty Baker's like, okay, that's enough.
That's
guys.
Enough.
He's like, that's it.
Well, did you see?
That was the list, Dusty? That's what we're allowed to do? You are so lucky you didn't get to play last year. You're so lucky there aren't 40,000 people in every stadium. But 3 games in this year, Dusty goes, okay, the guys have done their time.
What do we tell Move the children? On. Dusty asked.
That is a true thing.
Part of the thing, yes.
It's like
you're
sending a bad message to the kids in the stands.
Right. That's the that was the message that got sent. At least the Astros didn't put out a statement.
Good point.
At least they didn't put out a statement.
Good theme for the day.
Yep.
Number 4 in our 5-5, the Wizards in Milwaukee tonight. You win this game. It's on like Donkey Kong. You win this game, then we're moving and shaking. Scott Brooks on Russell Westbrook, who has been the man for the Wizards of late.
He's amazing. I mean, there's not enough. I mean, everybody's described him in so many different ways. I've been fortunate to see him for 8 years do a lot of things that are pretty much superhuman at times. Point guards don't do what he does. They're not built that way. There might be some that can probably shoot better. There might be some that probably can do certain things better, but there's nobody in the history of the game that can do what he does throughout the stat sheet.
That's proven. That's true. That's where we are. I mean, again, it's a different time. So I don't know that, you know, some of the numbers he would accumulate in the 90s when the pace was slower. And, you know, there were other guys, whether it was Stockton or Isaiah Thomas or Magic or Gary Payton or whomever. I know that in this era right now, no one's doing this. And I know that in the history of the game, it's ever been played, number one, this way. And number two, nobody's ever put up these kinds of numbers. Again, I keep saying this. He could put up zeros for the rest of the season, not DNPs, but if he played and put up nothing but zeros, he'd still average a triple-double. Just remarkable. Absolutely remarkable what he's done. But they got the work cut out tonight in Milwaukee. 5-game road trip. Biggest ones to me, Toronto, who's right behind you, Pacers half game in front of you, and two against the Hawks, who are frisky. You lose tonight, whatever, I don't care. No big deal. If you win, that's awesome. I'll do spin kicks. But it's those next 4 games that's going to decide this thing about where they are.
Yeah, I would love. They've won some signature games along the way as they've had a really good run here in the last month. But I would love one of these. This is a hang it on the wall and put it on the refrigerator so mom and dad are proud. If you can go out and beat Milwaukee in their place at 41-24, kind of cements the idea that they could be a really tough out and they can hang with really good teams in the playoffs. Finally, 5-5, you missed our interview with Derek Forrest of the Washington football team. We're also joined by William Bradley King. Forrest, 5th-round safety. Bradley King, 7th-round defensive end. Forrest, on what fans like you can expect from him as part of this defense moving forward?
You guys got a guy that's going to go out there and play with a high motor. You guys got a guy that's that's very smart, and I can anticipate plays. I can break down the offense. So you guys got a great steal in the draft, man. You got a guy that's gonna go out there and do what's best for the team, and you guys got a guy that's gonna put on plays each and every week that's gonna make you excited.
Odyssey app, you can hit rewind if you're listening that way. Had those fellas on at about 4:25, or you can just grab our podcast at grantanddanny.com. That is your 5 at 5 on G&D. We give it to you each and every day at this time. Ken's been waiting in Manassas. What's up, Ken? How are you? Ken, you there? You were on the radio, my friend. What's going on?
Ken.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi, Ken.
How you doing?
What's up, man?
Oh, we're just chilling. What are you doing?
I'm actually poolside at my house. How are you guys?
Poolside?
That's not bad.
My guy, by the way, is operating at a different speed than us right now. He's just laying out at his pool, drinking something delicious. Like 15 seconds later, how's everything going, boys?
Yeah,
I'm at the pool.
We're in a studio across an alley from construction.
Right.
Uncomfortably temperatured.
What's going on at the pool? And by the way, where are you in the area right now? Like at a pool? It's not that hot.
I'm in my backyard. I'm in Fairfax. Yeah.
Weather's different there.
Getting ready for this Cavs game tonight. I'm excited.
Yeah, you should be. It should be fun. What do you think's going to happen?
I think there's going to be gloves thrown in the first period, definitely. There's going to be the fight.
I'm thinking off the draw, to be honest. I think
the Rangers want something.
What do they want?
Revenge, I think, definitely.
This is like filling the blank. My guy.
Thank you, dude.
This is a good bit.
Ken's fun.
Are you, have you had anything to drink today or, anything else maybe?
No. This is my first drink. Just a nice little GNT.
Okay.
I just finished cleaning the pool. I just opened it, actually. It was pretty dirty. It was like a little swamp.
So you've earned it. You've earned your relaxation, your beverage, to unwind yourself.
Yes, definitely. I would say so.
This guy right here. Look at this guy right
here. Well, have fun, man.
I mean, that was awesome.
Checking us out next to the pool.
I really like that guy. I'd like to come hang out at the pool sometime. I don't swim with my shirt on, though. So be prepared for a fat guy in your pool. I don't like when people swim with their shirt on.
I think no matter who you are or what you got, if you got flapjacks hanging on nails,
you take your shirt off. You're the guy that had a shirt on at the beach this year.
I've never done that.
Totally did that. We did two segments on it.
Yeah, and you were wrong then, and you're wrong now. I sat in on a chair after I was sunburned once with a shirt on.
No, remember you did a whole thing where you wore
like a swim shirt.
Yes.
Yeah, when I was sunburned.
And you swam in it.
Well, it's different than what you're talking about. You're talking about like a T-shirt, so it looks like you're part of the contest.
Swimming in a shirt. You got very angry at me. You definitely wore that.
Well, okay. Yes. They're technically very different things. Like a surfer wears a shirt. You're in a shirt. You're talking about a cotton T-shirt. You're talking about putting on a shirt and going and staying in the pool.
Okay, well,
it's a very different thing.
One of the fat kid at like age 15 when we go to a party that's wearing a cotton T-shirt and he's in the pool. That's more embarrassing than being fat.
Yeah,
right? Let's just set that aside.
That's all I was talking about.
Also embarrassing is a grown adult wearing a swim shirt.
That is totally fine. And you're right. It is embarrassing because I got sunburned and it was like awkward. Instead of like the application of putting the sunscreen on.
You were very upset with me for a second.
Well, you acted like I was wearing a T-shirt on the beach.
I never said that. You assumed I meant that.
You're right.
You said like no one can wear a shirt. And I was like, you wore a shirt one time. And then you yelled at me. You got very upset with me.
Okay. There needs to be a distinction.
You're very flustered.
I'm very flustered by this. Because the accusation is like you wore a shirt on the beach. And it's like, well, yeah. But not your conventional shirt. Like a special beach swim shirt.
Right.
Thing to prevent myself from being burned to a crisp.
In fairness, when we did this before and it came out that you're a shirt on the beach guy,
I'm an aqua socks guy and a swim shirt guy.
Yes. By the way, Darius, you're
totally
new to
true.
This. Okay, so just so you know, Danny wears aqua socks at the beach. Embarrassing. Almost as bad as the Ranger statement.
Super comfortable.
And he wears a swim shirt.
Sometimes, when I can't get anybody to apply sunscreen to my back.
Pretended like that was perfectly reasonable and everyone should do it. Now, a few guys called in who are his age and said, yeah, I wear it too. Why wouldn't you? Like, that was something that happened.
Right. It's basically, and I don't know why I'm turning to defend myself to Darius, but I'll turn around and tell you. It's basically, if you can have somebody handy, when it's hard when you have a couple of kids, to apply sunscreen to the parts that you can't really reach, right? Like, I learned my lesson. I tried to spray the sunscreen on, and I got burned to a crisp on my back, and it was bad. So in order to avoid that, I just grabbed myself like a $9 swim shirt. So you were making it sound like I'm wearing the T-shirt, you could see my man boobs.
I didn't mean to make it sound like anything.
That's what I was bristling at.
Okay.
Because if you're if the point is you wore a swim shirt, yep, I did that. That's true.
That was all I was saying.
All right.
I was saying you last time you went to the beach wore a swim shirt.
I did.
So I was surprised
aqua
when you
socks
were, you
and
were
swim
jumping
shirt.
On my team to joan on people who wear shirts in the water. And I was like, oh, that surprises me. You're a shirt in the water guy. And that's when you just
right because you make it
abide.
Because we both have the image of the overweight kid wearing yeah. the white t-shirt where you're not hiding anything anyway.
I want to name the kid so badly that used to do that I grew up with. But too many people back home listening might like know. You know what I mean?
Of course they would know.
But
one of my really good buddies.
Remember, that's how you know it's a problem.
Yeah.
You remember the name of the kid that swam in a shirt.
I got my best buddy growing up. It was not next door, just the house up, just so two houses up from me. We argued all the time. And I was like, because, you know, he was self-conscious about it. Obviously, it's why he wore the shirt. I said, dude, it's just way better if you don't wear the shirt. I'm telling you. People make so much fun of you. And he got mad. We had so many fights about it.
It's better. Just be comfortable in your own skin and take that shirt off. There was an interview done, and I'm going to tell you where this audio is. We can grab it, Darius, with Zach Wilson, the new quarterback of the Jets, on radio. And he was asked a really uncomfortable, awkward question, and the host is having to defend himself now about the question. Now, I want to play it for Danny, and I want to see if you think this question was, like, inbounds and fair or was not cool to ask. We'll do that next on D&D. Your pals Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan in and around D.C. And, of course, to our Richmond audience, 9:10 a.m., 105.1 FM, part of the growing crew listening to us. We appreciate that. Take us with you, the Odyssey app. Used to be radio.com. Changed the name. It's Odyssey, but it's the same great app. Rewind, pause, run into the store. Doesn't matter. It's kind of on-demand show for you. Pretty sweet. Odyssey's your new way to listen to all the audio that matters to you. Download the app today to listen to The Fan. All right, so Zach Wilson goes number two to the Jets. And in the same way that we had Jamin Davis on, afternoon drive here in D.C., our first-round pick, they got Zach Wilson, number two overall pick, mm-hmm. who was considered at the start of this college football season to be a quarterback who might work his way into the top couple rounds. And then by the time the draft came around, sensation. That everybody wanted to get their hands on outside of the Jaguars who had the first pick. He goes number two to the Jets. They think they've got their quarterback of the future. But he went on the afternoon drive show on WFAN in New York with Evan Roberts, who I've known for many, many years. In fact, Evan and I were on a station channel on XM Radio years ago called Babylon 167. Evan is now the afternoon drive host with Craig Carton. He used to be on with Boomer in the morning. Carton and Roberts did the afternoon drive show. So Carton asked Zach Wilson about his mom being attractive because
what?
Yes, I'm telling you. So the draft night story about like them, I guess I didn't see this was like everyone was tweeting about that. Zach Wilson has a pretty mom, which people on Twitter are going to say and do things that, you know, are dumb and whatever. To then say, I've got to ask you about this because it's a big story.
Ooh.
You don't have to ask him about it. As you can imagine, Zach Wilson was uncomfortable, you can tell in his answer. And then a lot of people were not thrilled that the question got asked and thought it was not a necessary question, to which Carton has kind of defended the question. But let's hear the audio here, and Danny, you can react to it.
Let me just see what other people are saying about my guy. You know, in the headline of the Post is Zachpot. I'm like, all right, I like that, not bad. The lead story, though, is not about Zach Wilson becoming the New York Jet quarterback. Your mom has become the lead story here. And I say that respectfully because people are like, the star of the first round of the draft is Mrs. Wilson because she's a very attractive woman. And I'm just wondering how awkward that is for you that you just got picked second overall in the draft and the focus is, wow, his mom is really hot. I assume you've dealt with it your whole life, but now it's playing out on Broadway. How awkward was that for you?
Yeah, it's not my favorite for sure. We like to keep her out of the spotlight, but she's an awesome lady, and I love having her support.
No doubt. No doubt. I respect that. I had to bring it up because it is on the front page of the papers today. And we asked a lot of our guests, just so we have an idea of how we match up comparatively to them, how much are you bench pressing these days? What's your max? Because Evan and I just went to the gym this morning. I just wanted to get a sense of where we're at.
Pivots to the next thing, you know, and it's just like that never happened. But I just, ooh. I love the idea that I had to ask. You didn't have to ask.
You didn't. I always wonder about this, where I'm not cut out to do that. And I wonder if I'd be better off if I was. Do you know what I mean?
Well, he's immensely successful.
That's my point. He's very successful.
He's nationally renowned. Everyone knows his name. He was doing one of the best morning shows in the country, got in trouble, immediately got back on Afternoon Drive and the number one quote-unquote radio market in the country.
Yeah.
If you've been in radio for 3 seconds in New York, you run every national channel and, you know, every other market basically doesn't exist unless New York says it's okay that they exist. So, yeah, he's a star.
I mean, so that's my point. I don't question his success at all.
I listen to them plenty on, you know, on the app when we were in middays when I would walk the dog or take the baby for a walk in the stroller because I know Evan a little bit. And he's super entertaining and really funny. I don't think there's anything wrong with that question. Like, I'm not sitting here
because it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
No, it wasn't.
Your mom's hot. What's that like? It wasn't that. It was, it like when it should be your day, but everyone's talking about something else?
Right. But it is still, it's incredibly uncomfortable. And it didn't need to be asked. I'm just going to tell you. It didn't need to be.
Right. There's no way it needed to be.
I have to ask this. It's the lead story in the paper. First of all, is it really? If it's the lead story in the paper did a bad job covering the draft. It shouldn't be the lead story in the paper. I have a hard time believing it's in the paper at all, but maybe it is.
Maybe in one of the pages of one of the rags, yeah.
It might be the lead story on like a Twitter account. You didn't have to ask it.
Right. So, but that's what I always wonder. I was like, there are in the things that I've done in my life, comedy and now this, obviously, you know, I still do both. Some of the guys and gals that make it are shameless. And I don't say that in a negative way. They don't have the embarrassment gene. They don't have the "this is awkward" gene. They just push forward. They just go. They don't care. Any criticism is just cascades right off them.
I think awkward is good. You know, it's right? Like if you're if you feel that tension in your car, that's like when you win.
And they don't care about it. And I marvel at that. I'm envious of that. I wish I didn't have shame. I wish I wasn't embarrassed as easily as I am, or I wish I didn't get as uncomfortable. I don't have that in my DNA. I can't do that. And I wonder, well, maybe that holds you back. Maybe you should be more like Craig Carton. Not always, but like in that kind of way, if we had Zach Wilson, I wouldn't be like, "So Zach, what's up with your mom? She's hot." I couldn't do that ever, like ever in a million years.
So he got some heat, I guess, because he took to Twitter to discuss this. And he said, "Appreciate how sensitive you are, but be sure to listen to what I said versus what you assume I said. I asked him how awkward it was that the Post wrote a story about his mom's looks, also the number one trending topic online all day. I didn't ask him about her looks or to comment on them. Big difference." Which is fair. I mean, as you said, it's not like he said, "Dude, your mom.
What's it like having a hot mom?" It actually was more fair. It was awkward.
His question to the first point that you made, the first observation you point was, people are talking about this. That's got to be really weird for you. You could have also just not brought it up at all. That would have been just as good of an interview. I don't think a single person tuning in was going, "I really hope they get to the bottom of the fact that his mom was attractive right. at the draft last night."
Let's actually get to the bottom of that.
Like, if you're a Jets fan, you got 50 things you want asked. I'm not sure if that's one. Maybe that's like 46.
We got to the AFC title game with Mark Sanchez one time. We had a guy that loves feet and wants to eat a snack. Other than that, it's been an absolute wasteland for decades. Are we going to be any good ever? That's all I want to find out when that guy comes on.
Let's go to Chris, who's in Gainesville on G&D. What's up, Chris? Hey, Chris. How are you, buddy?
Hey guys, good. Calling about tonight's game with the from the Jason Bishop betting angle, the over/under is 6.5. Do you think is there going to be a ton of open ice? Are the refs going to call it? A ton of power plays, a lot of scoring, or do you think it's going to be the exact opposite?
No,
plus, we also have some high scorers out.
Yeah, I think there's going to be plenty of goals. To be honest, I mean the problem in betting an over tonight is, to your point, no Ovechkin, less firepower, although you do have the great Daniel Sprong, who's got 5 goals in his last 5 games.
Just put him in jersey number 8.
But on the third line for the Capitals, you're going to have essentially one of the guys from the taxi squad getting called up because they're so undermanned. But I'm expecting, you know, a lot of 4-on-4, maybe a 5-on-3 at some point, like a bunch of penalties and power plays.
I would guess the final score is something like 5-3, 5-4, something like that, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of open ice tonight, too. So we'll see.
All right, appreciate
it. I like it. It feels like Zibanejad scores twice a night against the Capitals.
Old Miko Zibanejad.
That's just how it always feels to me.
He went about a month where he didn't score a goal, and he scored 73 in the last 19 nights, something, numbers approximate. Great player. He scored a 4-goal game against the Caps last year.
It always feels like that guy's very comfortable, and he scores goals, and he's doing that thing with his hair, which is all long, and you hate him.
Nobody tweet me, by the way, when you lose your bet tonight. I ain't Nick Costas, okay? This isn't no sweats, better bets, or whatever.
Minimal sweats.
Sweats and bets and all the bets.
Sweatpants for your bet pants.
Yeah, this is not what I'm doing. So you ask me if I think a bunch of goals are going to be scored. I think a bunch of goals are going to be
scored. That's my feeling as well.
If there's a bet on fights, I take the over on that. I guess what are they going to set it at? We could set it. What do you think? How many fights tonight?
2.5.
It never really is as many as you're expecting.
It might just
like
be the one fracas, and then they play the hockey.
So I think Wilson drops the gloves in the opening frame, and I think it could happen right off the draw. Supposedly, the Rangers have called up their enforcer from
some guy.
The minors, okay? So that's going to be your first fight. I also think Dylan fights tonight. He's always kind of looking for a bout. He's a heavyweight as well. So I got those two as a lock. The question is, do you get a third from Willie? Does Garnet Hathaway get into one tonight, possibly, representing the fourth line? I mean, that's the roster. Willie is a lock for one. I think Dylan's a lock for a second. And then it's, is there another Wilson or is there another Hathaway? So I got as many as four fights tonight.
That's why I say 2.5.
You could always
would be
get
the
like
over under.
A weird fight you didn't see coming between two smaller guys. Sometimes that happens. You're setting it at 3.5?
2.5, I think, should be the line.
2.5.
You tell me. Is that off base?
I think that's right. Because I'm debating, will there be two or three? I'll go under. I think oftentimes games like this don't quite deliver. I think there's going to be a lot of what the announcers call the rough stuff.
The rough stuff. The face washes.
Right. There's going to be a lot of whistles and people pushing each other after the play and a bunch of people getting tackled around the cage. God forbid anybody gets shoved to the ice after they jump on someone's back in the cage. Larry Brooks is going to write a story about it and say someone almost got murdered. But
off the tape with one hand because he's clutching his pearls with the other.
The
I think
Rangers
it's an over.
Are going to put out a big statement tomorrow, and two other people are going to get fired.
Two more
probably.
Statements. Yeah, I think it's over because I think this is their Super Bowl now. I think what else do they have to play for? They're making reservations at Sandals Resort. They're getting their tee times all set up. This is their last thing. They're going to throw hands.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports joins us in about 20 minutes at 6 o'clock. Next, Bill Barnwell has a trade that Washington could make for Aaron Rodgers. We want to know if you guys would make it. Two ones, two twos, Ioannidis and Fitzpatrick. There were actually a couple of people that hopped in on hold. We didn't get to take calls on this really earlier. That wanted to say that they didn't want to make that trade. And I found that insane.
A little too steep.
I can't fathom. In fact, Chris Russell, your friend and my friend, that yeah. Chris Russell, WrestleMania, the Rooster, he tweeted today, no way I would do this. Not with Aaron Rodgers' age. What are you talking about? There are really people out there that wouldn't do that trade. I want to hear from them. Why not? Or why would you? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Dan. And Danny on the Fan, Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports is supposed to join us at 6. We're going to get his thoughts on where the quarterbacks ended up in this draft class and what he thinks about Washington football team's haul. But I also want to bring up the idea of Aaron Rodgers being traded. Does he actually think it's going to happen? So two-parter here. Number one, we have not spent time taking calls on, like, do you want to go get Aaron Rodgers? I think as a radio show, it's kind of I don't know if low rent is the right phrasing, but it's easy and anyone can do it. And it's just kind of serving fast food out the window in a way where everyone wants Aaron Rodgers. But we now have a trade offer that Bill Barnwell is saying could get it done. And he's presenting options for a bunch of different teams. And he comes out and he says, If Washington wants Aaron Rodgers, this is what they would trade, and Green Bay might say yes. Two ones.
Yep.
Two twos. Matt Ioannidis, your defensive tackle, who's very good at getting to the quarterback, pocket collapsing pass rusher, who year in and year out is on his way to 10 or 11 sacks and maybe getting to the Pro Bowl, and then he gets hurt. But I really like the player. And Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you'd throw in Fitzpatrick, perhaps, to try to make some of the money
give
work,
them a bridge, yeah.
As well as, yeah, at that point, you know, they might just throw Bryce Love out onto the field. But if they want to, they could start Fitz for a season. Getting rid of Fitz when you're getting Fitzpatrick, obviously, is nothing. It's just a massive upgrade at quarterback. That's a throw into the deal that means nothing for you. Losing Ioannidis stings if you're just talking about quality football player on defense. But on that defensive line, you've got Montez Sweat. You've got Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne at his position. You still possess Chase Young's skill off the edge. And Tim Settle came into his own last year after the Ioannidis injury. Not quite as good a pass rusher, Danny, but you are stacked up front.
Yeah.
Not to mention the value of giving up an interior defensive tackle who's good but not an all-pro for an elite quarterback. The draft picks, I guess, is what's getting some pushback from Washington football team fans, and I think that's crazy. 2 second-round picks in an Aaron Rodgers deal, where do I send them? 2 ones, you got to wonder, where are we going to be picking if you're running the Washington
front office? The 19th pick twice, pretty much, is what I'm looking at.
Yeah, if you're Ron Rivera, is there a chance we're picking 4th and 7th? That's very different than picking 17th and 26th. Now, if you make the playoffs a couple times.
Yeah, where does 8 and 9 get you?
Now, with Aaron Rodgers, okay, if he was to come in here, I would think with this defense and Aaron Rodgers, you'd immediately be a contender. And I don't just mean to win the East, I mean to win playoff games. That could become the 20th and the 26th, the 21st and the 29th picks, potentially, in the first round. So I can't imagine looking at this deal, 1-1, 2-2, Ioannidis and Fitz, and saying anything other than, oh my God, it's been 30 years, I'm 32 years old, I've always wanted a quarterback, and they might have one. But it always amazes me when you ask a question like this, and you see people, we're getting the tweets, the money's too much, it's too many picks. It's
we'll
too
find
much
one
to give
soon.
Up. Yeah, let's try somewhere
amazing.
Else. It's like a single person who has not been on a date in years turning down a gorgeous, stunningly beautiful female because
the French restaurant's too expensive.
Yeah, they don't want to spend money at the movie theater.
Just if this organization and if our fans had gone from Hall of Famer to Hall of Famer at quarterback and another Hall of Famer was up, I might go, that's too steep. We'll find one. I cannot imagine being starving in the desert without a drop of water or a morsel of food for the decades since Joe Theismann broke his leg almost 90% of my life ago and not being so beyond desperate to do whatever you possibly had to do to move mountains to find one of these guys, even at the end of his career. He won the MVP last year. This isn't 24 times. You cut his season numbers last year in half. It's up there with the better Redskins/WFT football quarterback seasons we've had over the last 25 years. Cut his numbers in half, and they're better than most of the seasons guys put together. That's Aaron Rodgers. Everything. All of it. Take it. Take my shirt. Take one of my junk pieces. Take whatever. I don't care.
What is that?
You can take the right one or the left one. Whatever you guys want. I'll take Aaron Rodgers.
Very weird wording. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Ryan Wilson is next. Stretch run of Grant and Danny. If you're making your way down to Southeast DC for Nats baseball tonight, get you a little preview of the ball game before we get out of here. You also could very well be heading on out to a bar to watch the Caps, the Wiz, and the Nats all at the same time if you don't have three screens in the house.
We're at that last button tonight, baby.
Previous channel button's going to get some work. Let's go to the BetQL guest hotline. Welcome onto the show, our friend Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports. Ryan, it has been a minute. Thank you, sir. How you doing?
Hey, Grant. Danny, how you guys doing?
Doing pretty good, pal. Things are well. All right, the dust is kind of settling from the draft before we get kind of into mini camps and things. Just kind of give me your big picture view. What are some of your takeaways from that busy draft weekend?
It felt incredibly exciting. Sometimes we sort of know what's going to happen, but we were all in, most of us anyway, thinking Mac Jones is going 3, and San Francisco turned the draft upside down with that third pick when they took Trey Lance, and it sort of just snowballed from there in terms of having no real sense for what was going to happen. You know, the Raiders in the middle of the draft take Alex Leatherwood in the first round, and that was sort of a surprise. The Bears trading up once again for a quarterback, and what that means not only for Justin Fields but also for GM Ryan Pace and head coach Matt Nagy, who, you know, understandably could have been fired this offseason, and they're coming back. Mac Jones falling to the Patriots, which feels like a fantastic fit. All those things were sort of Patriots and Mac Jones, you know, on paper made sense, but you thought they would have to trade up for him to last to 15. It feels like the Patriots might be back. It feels like the 49ers experiment with Trey Lance may take some time just because he hasn't played a lot of football. I was sort of excited. And, you know, I love the draft anyway, but this felt particularly unpredictable, which certainly makes for great ratings if you're the NFL.
This is why I hated the Fields situation for him. I believe that there's a good chance Nagy and Pace still get blown out. And if that happens, Fields is whoever the next coach's quarterback that he inherits is. And that never works for guys. I'm not comparing him to Haskins as a player, but we kind of saw this with Haskins. He was brought in, front office, head coach change, and you don't have a chance even if you are good. But that happens with players who are better than Haskins all the time. Do you think it's a lock that those two guys bought themselves a couple years with the pick?
That's it, Grant, and that's the big thing, because I don't love the fit only for what you're sort of outlining there, and I was coming at it from a different angle. I'm afraid that Nagy and Pace are going to push Justin Fields out there before he's ready, just because they are trying to save their hide, and perhaps he's not going to be ready to go out there and play behind. The offensive line is going to be better because they drafted some guys, but behind a team that hasn't been that good recently, and he has to do a lot, and perhaps he's not caught up to speed in terms of what it means to be an NFL quarterback, that concerns me. I don't have any concerns with him in terms of preparation and all the issues we found out later about Dwayne Haskins, but I think you're right. It's not a perfect situation. I would have felt a lot better about Justin Fields' chances if he had gone to San Francisco or New England, for example, but this is what happens to these quarterbacks picked at the top of the draft. But to your point, Urban Meyer presumably isn't going anywhere. He just got hired. Robert Saleh isn't going anywhere. Both those teams are quarterbacks at the top, and you feel like it's more stable there than it is in Chicago, because Ryan Pace is the same guy who traded up a few years ago to get Mr. Trubisky, and he missed out on the two best quarterbacks in Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. So I feel like their back's against the wall. And to your point, if they get canned, then what? Then the new guy comes in, and if it's not working with Justin Fields, you know, it's a typical Bears fans sort of syndrome in that, okay, this is too good to be true. Now we have to start from scratch again.
What's the Trey Lance timetable to you?
I think Jimmy Garoppolo is probably incredibly excited that it was Trey Lance, not Mac Jones, because I mean, I can't envision a situation where you're not starting Jimmy G for most of the season. I mean, you know, we talked this to death. Trey Lance played one game in the last 400 plus days. He played in an offense in North Dakota State where he was only asked to throw the ball 16 times a game. He only threw 133 passes in high school. So the guy doesn't have a lot of reps. That doesn't mean he can't be great, but if you're asking, you know, the whole thing with the number three pick trading up there is that Shanahan wants his guy because he was frustrated with Jimmy G not being able to do what he wanted. Now, Trey Lance could get there for sure, but is he going to get there by September? That would seem like a huge stretch. So I'm thinking Jimmy G starts for the first 3 months. You know, you draft a guy third overall, you expect him to play in year one, fair or not. I would lean on sitting him. But I'm the same guy who said last year that the Chargers should sit Justin Herbert the entire time. And, you know, that blew up right in my face. So the difference, of course, is that Herbert played at a big Power 5 school and played four seasons. We'll see where Trey Lance is after taking off more than a year and playing at the FCS level.
Of the fits outside of the first round at quarterback, Trask to Tampa, Mills to Houston, Mond to Minnesota, what do you like? What don't you like?
I love Mond to Minnesota, and I like Mond coming out before the last weekend. He was my sixth-ranked quarterback, and I would have been none surprised if he went in round two. To Washington, for example, to Pittsburgh, for example, those are teams. To Chicago, had they not traded up. So he ended up going among the second-tier guys. He went to Minnesota after Trask, a few picks earlier, went to Tampa Bay. And I think that's a great situation in Minnesota. You have playmakers. The offensive line is going to be improved. The defense is going to be improved. And you have Kirk Cousins in front of you, so there's no pressure. There's more pressure on Kirk Cousins than Kellen Mond right now. The pick I absolutely hated and didn't understand on any level is the very next selection, Davis Mills out of Stanford. went to Houston. Mills started 11 games at Samford. You know, he got some buzz in the media in the last few weeks leading up to the draft. I liked him. I didn't love him. I think he's a developmental guy. And, you know, now that's the fourth quarterback on a Houston roster. That was their very first pick in the draft because they traded everything else away under Bill O'Brien during that Laramie Tunsil trade. And they get a guy who's not even close to playing. You have to figure out what's going on with Deshaun Watson. You sign Tyrod Taylor and Ryan Finley. It just doesn't make any sense what that organization is doing, which is great for the rest of the teams in the AFC South. But, I mean, Davis Mills, you talk about a terrible situation to go into. Forget Justin Fields. Davis Mills feels like he has no chance of success for a team that is directionless right now.
At Ryan Wilson, CBS. On the Twitterverse for our guest, Ryan Wilson. Ryan, this is an unfair question. But we're doing this. We're kind of doing these reactions, and everybody likes to write the definitive script and book, you know, moments after this thing completes. Of the first round picks, if you had to put all your money on somebody busting, who is it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot of pressure, right? You know, I guess it has to be one of these quarterbacks because you go through history, starting where, however far you want to go back, up until, you know, presumably last year, you can find guys that aren't going to work out. So which quarterback is it going to be? I don't want to say bust. I'm going to say struggles to find to meet expectations. I feel bad for these kids because they're kids. But I think Zach Wilson is going to have a lot of work to do in New York. Is he better than Sam Darnold? Because I have no idea. Is he better than Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones? I'm not sure. I'm being honest. I mean, he sort of flew under the radar because it became Mac Jones versus Justin Fields in the media down the last 6 weeks or so of the pre-draft process. But he's going to a situation, there's a new coach, and the general manager, Joe Douglas, certainly knows what he's doing. But that the ineptitude of that organization is long-lasting, and it starts with the ownership. You have to go back to, 2009, 2010, when they made those deep playoff runs of back-to-back years with Rex Ryan, and Mark Sanchez. Since then, they've been pretty terrible. So I think there's a lot of pressure. You're not playing in Provo, Utah. You're playing in New York City, and the spotlight's going to be pretty intense. So I hope he has success, but it wouldn't surprise me if he struggles. I mean, Sam Darnold came from USC and had no chance of success in New York. So it's a tall order for Zach Wilson to go there and magically turn things around, even with a new coach.
Ryan Wilson on Grant and Danny. What'd you think of Washington's draft?
I liked it. I did a rankings, and I didn't do the typical grade rankings, A, B, C, D, F. I did my pre-draft big board where I had grades on all these guys that were drafted and compared them to where they were drafted. And by doing so, Washington actually ranked 20th, which isn't great. But when you go through their draft class, I liked what they did. The biggest issue for me was that they took John Bates in the fourth round and they had him going a little later, the tight end. And the long snapper, that threw me for a loop, I'll be honest with you. But I loved Jamin Davis. He was one of my favorite players in this draft class. The linebacker, Sam Cosmi, going in the second round, I think they got value there. I had him going a little higher than that. De'Ami Brown's an absolute home run hitter, the wide receiver out of UNC. He's a deep threat who sometimes struggles with focus drops. And if he can focus, then you presume he won't drop the ball, and that's great news because Terry McLaurin needs help. They signed Samuel. They have Antonio Gibson coming out of the backfield. So it feels like it's coming together. And maybe one of my favorite picks in this entire class for Washington was Dax Milne, who I sort of liken to a more athletic Hunter Renfrow, who played Clemson and is now with the Raiders. But he was Zach Wilson's go-to guy at BYU time and time again, and he always made plays. He wasn't necessarily the fastest guy on the field, but he was a playmaker. And I think for a team that did so well in free agency, and I sort of liked, I was leaning towards Washington to be the favorites in the division before the draft, I think they've sort of solidified that for me now as we go through the next few months and preparing for the actual season to take place.
Ryan, what about the rest of the NFC East? What'd you make of what they did? Big picture, you can go down to the nitty-gritty, wherever you want to take it.
Yeah, so I'll start with the Giants here. I like the idea that Gettleman finally decided to trade down. They got a lot of value in Kadarius Toney, the wide receiver of Florida. They could take a Devontae Smith, so we'll see if Kadarius Toney plus a first-round pick is more value at the end of the day than Devontae Smith. That'll be interesting to watch. And they got an edge rusher, Zito Delari, in round two, who had a first-round grade on. He fell because of some injury concerns, but I like what they did. And then you look at the Eagles. I thought they crushed it. We saw the video in the draft room where there was some dissension about the third-round pick and Milt Williams defensive tackle. But the guy, Kenneth Gainwell, who played with Antonio Gibson at Memphis and a similar type player in that he can catch and run the ball. Devontae Smith, we talked about. Landon Dickerson is going to be the wild card, the center from Alabama. They got round two because he has a huge injury history. But if he's healthy, I mean, that's a huge step in the right direction for what that offensive line certainly needs. And then Dallas. I thought, look, they had needs at defense, and that's what they address. You get the sense they locked up Jerry Jones and wouldn't let him trade up to get Kyle Pitts, and that was a smart move. Micah Parsons is a top five talent. He fell because of some maturity issues. We got Kelvin Joseph in round two, who played with Jamin Davis at Kentucky, and he's a baller. He's a first-round talent, got at the top of round two. And then just down the line, they got defensive guys. And the last name I'll mention is Simi Fehoko, the wide receiver out of Stanford, who's a tall, fast, physical guy who just needs, again, recruit with Donnie Brown. He struggles in terms of consistently catching the ball, but he's new to the game. And I think that's sort of a late-round flyer you take, and you send him deep and see what happens and hope he progresses over the next two or three years. But I think all the teams in the NFC East did really well, but I think Washington has positioned themselves to be the favorite, you know, at least as we sit here in early May.
Will Aaron Rodgers be a Packer week one, 2021?
I said 7% yesterday when I was talking on our podcast, and then I read something today from Bob McGinn out of The Athletic, and he spoke with someone close to Aaron Rodgers and said it's closer to 2%. So I'm going to go, no, he will not be there, because unlike Deshaun Watson, before all the off-field allegations sort of sidelined any trade conversations with him, it feels like Aaron Rodgers, as 36 or 37, however old he is fine retiring, sitting it out just to be spiteful. He strikes me as one of the most vengeful slash stubborn people in the NFL, and I think he would do that simply to spit in the face of the Packers, who he feels have wronged him. So I'm interested to see where he ends up, but I can't envision the situation based on what we've seen now, unless it's one big joke that he's coming back to Green Bay.
How do you slice this up in terms of Green Bay ruining this relationship? And their hands aren't clean. I don't know how you draft Love without at least consulting Rodgers first. But also, he does seem like a giant pain in the butt to deal with. I mean, is it all the Packers? Like, we had the McCarthy story for years, now the LaFleur stories. Like, at some point when everyone says, like, oh, my roommate's insufferable, and it's been eight straight roommates, like, you might be annoying too.
That's right. I think it's a two-way street. I think you're right. And, you know, he's estranged on some level from his family members, I believe. So there's some stuff going on there. And I don't think it's just a one-way conversation, but it is sort of slap in the face to a first ballot Hall of Famer where last year in the deepest draft class, not only do you not take a wide receiver at any point, even sign one as an undrafted free agent, you trade up to take a quarterback. And you don't tell him, as you mentioned, this year, you don't take a quarterback in rounds one or two. You wait till round three, a wide receiver. You wait till round three to get one. They got a good one in Amari Rodgers, by the way. But at this point, it feels like Rodgers has made his decision and he's moving on. But you're right, and I want to see what happens should he get traded or moved elsewhere, how those relationships work themselves out. Because, you know, there'll be a honeymoon situation where he's winning a bunch of games for wherever he lands, and then I imagine at some point things go sideways, and we hear about the same things you heard about in Green Bay. So I think both sides are probably at fault, but I think the Packers are the biggest losers in this, unless Jordan Love is able to step up and do the things that Rodgers did 15 years ago, which seems like a lot to ask a guy in his second year.
So it's interesting that it's after the draft, right, that this may all go down. So a lot of teams drafted their guy. Like, one of the great places he could have gone was San Francisco. Well, they've got a lot invested now in Trey Lance, Jimmy G, et cetera. I guess you'd make room conceivably, but it lessens the numbers of teams that might be in the marketplace for him. Where does he go?
Yeah, so I guess Denver is a landing spot. They only have Teddy Bridgewater and, you know, Drew Locke. I don't think anyone sold on him long-term, but that's the thing, man. I mean, where is he going to go? The Steelers need a quarterback, but they're not trading pretty first-round picks for a guy who's 18 months younger than Roethlisberger. The Lions need a quarterback, but they're not trading within the division, I don't think. I don't know how desperate it is. The funny thing is, we're going through this. You can make a case for just about every team except for probably the Chargers, maybe the Bengals, and I was even saying, like, would the Buccaneers trade for him? That would be hysterical, but I don't think you'd do it if you're the Buccaneers either. But the other teams, I guess you're having that conversation with the Dolphins, make a lot of sense. I feel like if he goes to Miami, that team is over the top. They're the best team, second best team maybe in the conference after Kansas City. The Raiders, perhaps. I think there was some conversation. We know that Russ Wilson was reportedly interested in that. Maybe Aaron Rodgers would be okay with that. But do you want to play for John Gruden? I don't know the answer to that question. So I think they're destinations. It's just a matter of the price. Aaron Rodgers not being, you know, prickly about it, and whether the Packers are going to come off of it, because maybe they don't. Maybe they want to be stubborn too, and Rodgers will just sit out, and they'll roll with Jordan Love either way.
Ryan Wilson, always good. CBS Sports is where you can find some of his work. Thank you, sir. We appreciate you.
Thank you, guys.
See you, buddy.
Well, great catching up, and always enjoy the insight. Grant and Danny with you. Final few minutes here on The Fan. We're going to turn things over in about 10 minutes. To the Nationals pregame show with Charlie Sloz and Dave Jagger, and then eventually baseball here on The Fan tonight. Quick congratulations in order. John Means of the Baltimore Orioles just put the finishing touches on a no-hitter against the Seattle Mariners. Means and the Birds in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest today to take on the Mariners. Means punched out 12. I believe he faced the minimum. Didn't walk anybody. Didn't strike anybody out. I didn't do much digging into the outing. Did he hit somebody? What was the?
So I actually missed what the blemish was. It may have been a hit by pitch, maybe an error or something.
I'm assuming it's got to be a hit by pitch because there's no walks and nothing else on the line.
No, it was a. Oh my goodness, I just had it. It was a wild pitch. Sorry, it was a wild. It was a strikeout on a wild pitch, and yeah, he couldn't get the runner at first.
That is a dagger.
Yeah. So the runner.
So
got
that's why he never perfecto.
Correct.
Is he punched a guy out? He got 28 outs. Right. Wow.
That's pretty incredible.
That honks.
But he did get a no-hitter, so congratulations to him. One of the best lefties in baseball. Nobody ever talks about the guy. His ERA is 1.3.
He's nasty.
You go back 2 seasons ago, he made the All-Star team for the Orioles. Last year in the pandemic season, I don't think he was completely healthy, and he wasn't particularly good. And now he's back to just being one of the best southpaws in all of baseball. So congrats to him. That's pretty neat. By the way, 3 real no-hitters in baseball so far this year that went 9 innings. You've got Joe Musgrove, who pulled it off for the Padres, Carlos Rodon for the White Sox, and now John Means of the Orioles. Obviously, Madison Bumgarner went 7 innings without giving up a hit in a 7-inning game as part of a doubleheader for the Diamondbacks. That was not recognized by Major League Baseball as a no-hitter. And I looked this up. There have been 6 other times where guys have pitched into the 7th inning with a no-hitter this year. So you're talking about 3 real no-hitters, 1 fake no-hitter, and 6 times where guys have pitched 6-plus innings into the 7th without giving up a hit. I say all that to say pitching is the best that it's ever been. Hitters are having a really hard time making good contact. Buckle up because this is going to be a thing all year long.
That's, yep.
I just gave you basically 10 examples of games where through 6 innings, people are flirting with no hitters. It's happened a little over 300 times in the history of the sport, but I think this is going to be a reoccurring theme all year long because offense is down so much in baseball.
Yeah, and as you correctly said, my summation, people ask me questions about it, who don't follow us closely, my summary is this. Pitching is nastier than it has ever been. The science is on the side of the pitcher. So as hitters, we're learning about launch angle and lifting weights and things. Pitchers are doing the same old stuff, and just the occasional freak could throw in the mid-90s, and that's adorable. Now, everybody has figured out how to maximize their bodies. Everyone has figured out how to throw 3, 4, 5, 10 miles an hour harder than they would have a handful of years ago. Pitching is nastier than it has ever been. How does anyone hit? I don't know how anyone hits. It's ridiculous how good these guys are. John Means, I think, got 24 swings at his changeup in this game. The Mariners swung and missed at 14 of those and barely made contact with any of the others. Unbelievable.
His changeup is one of the best pitches in the game. I mean, but when you pitch off of that, it's just so impressive. There's so many guys who are afraid to throw changeups because you're not changing up from anything. Like, in succession, mm-hmm. when it fades and is deceptive and you can't get a barrel to it, it doesn't matter. Just locate that out of the fat part of the strike zone, which is what he's done. A Nats and Braves tonight at Nationals Park. Let's give you your lineup right now for the Washington Nationals. Starts at the top of the order with Trey Turner at shortstop. He and his 320 average with 6 home runs. Josh Harrison's going to bat second. He's hitting 344 on the young season. Ryan Zimmerman in the lineup against the lefty. Here we go, Zim. 319 average, 4 homers and 10 RBI. He's got some of the best numbers on the team despite being a part-time player. Starlin Castro, he of his 253 average and mostly singles, will bat cleanup tonight. Hadn't been a great season offensively for Castro. He does have a team-high 13 RBI. A lot of those came early in the year. Yan Gomes is here. Yan Gomes is batting 5th. Lefty on the hill. He's been hot. Had a couple extra base hits over the weekend, including a homer. He's up to nearly 260 with the average. Kyle Schwarber against the lefties in the lineup. He's actually hit lefties okay. 188 on the year for his batting average. He'll bat 6th. Center fielder Victor Robles batting 7th. He's got just 1 stolen base. And lots of outs on the base paths. Jordy Mercer back in the lineup. Had a double on Sunday. The former Pirate, Tiger, Yankee. It's 318 for the year, batting 8th. And pitcher Eric Fetty hits 9th.
That's just on paper. Nowhere near as good a lineup as the Braves are going to try it out there. So they got Max Fried on the hill, I think, pitching for the Braves, who's gotten off to a kind of a crummy start coming back from working his way back from injury.
Why do you say that? He's only got an 11 ERA.
Because I think it's over 2 starts. He's getting hit around pretty
kind
good.
Kind of crummy. 2.5 whip for him this year.
So that's not particularly good. I'm going to keep beating this drum. The Nationals. Two conversations. Conversation one, it's kind of amazing they're here. they're always right around 11-14. They've been 11-14 or 12-13 each of the last four seasons, by the way, to start the year. Number two, it's kind of amazing that this is where they are with all the injuries and the setbacks and the different things. Thank goodness for performances from guys like Eric Fetty, Joe Ross and company, etc. But the third thing I'm going to say is they're middle of the order. They are paying dudes to hit lots of homers and produce. That's Castro. That's Schwarber. That's Bell. That simply has to happen at some point. It just does. The fact that they're okay without those guys doing that, aside from a couple game winners from Schwarber and the occasional, you know, wind-aided bandbox home run in Florida from Bell, the fact that it's not happening very often and they're still basically 500, pretty amazing testament to the other guys. But if you're going to win a division, if you're going to have a meaningful season, that middle of the order that they're paying to hit homers has got to start doing it.
Yeah, 25 games, and the three guys you're mentioning, Castro, who they're banking on being around 25, Bell, who they wanted 30 from, Schwarber, who they wanted 30 from, those guys have a combined five home runs right now through 25 games.
Acuña's going to have that this series.
He might, and he's got 10 on the season. All he's doing right now is leading the charge for the MVP award in the National League. He's almost single-handedly kept the Braves afloat. Freddie Freeman does not look like Freddie Freeman right now. Marcell Ozuna's been awful. And Ozzy Albies has really struggled compared to what you're used to from him. Dansby Swanson is not hitting like he typically does either. So it's been the Ronald Acuña show. All right, two other games tonight. You've got the Caps and the Rangers. We've been talking all day about it. There will be fights. Tom Wilson, bring your big boy fists tonight. I think Brendan Dillon gets into one as well. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if Garnet Hathaway ends up dropping the gloves. I'm saying under the 3.5 that you suggested, I think there will be three true fights tonight and a lot of skirmishes.
So I had the over-under was 2.5 fights, and I've got the over. I think this is what the Rangers are going to try to do. So I think you're going to see three, maybe more. A couple nuggets here. Samantha Pell just tweeted this. Daniel Sprong is out tonight with an illness that's not COVID-19 related.
How many guys are out?
What is COVID-19 related?
They're going to have two taxi squad players playing.
Yeah. What is COVID-19 related, we don't know the extent, is Kuznetsov. And still TBD is Jeff Schultz.
Justin Schultz.
Who's Jeff Schultz?
Also a defenseman from the Capitals like 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's again, it's a J and a Schultz. I did the thing where I crossed the names.
That is your move.
That's my thing.
Whatever that is, there a name for that? There's got to be a name
whatever
for that.
It's wires crossed. If you get the same first initial and a last name, I got no chance.
But at least in this case, we're talking about a defenseman for the Capitals.
Yep.
In both cases, as a matter of fact, which is kind of cool. All right, last thing. Wizards tonight against the Bucks. I'm not expecting a win. If they win, I'm going to be really excited about this team tomorrow. I'm just telling you. They're 30-35. They're going up against a finals-caliber team in Milwaukee. And they're coming off of a game where they went in and desperate, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, who has triple-doubles every time he plays against the Wizards, you know, put up numbers. If they can beat the Bucks tonight, I'm coming in here screaming tomorrow about how the Wiz might be a thing.
Because all it is right now is fun. You lose this game, whatever, you still got four big ones to go. They play fast, too, Milwaukee does. So it's going to be a high-paced basketball game. Over, I think, in the if there's an over-under type situation you're betting on.
Thanks to Darris. Thanks for Ryan behind the scenes. For Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Thanks for listening. We're back at it tomorrow. Short show because there's a day Nats game. Tony Gwynn Jr. will join us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.